Bears Roundtable is powered by Xfinity.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to PNC Studio at Hallis Hall. I'm Jeff Joniak, and this is Chicago Bears Roundtable, along with my broadcast partner from News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM WBBM, the one and only Tom Thayer, joined by the senior writer of ChicagoBears.com, Larry Mayer. Let's see what he brings to the table today. Hopefully it's something interesting, because we know that Jim Morrissey, the ex-Chicago Bears linebacker, will bring a lot to the table today. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. He was here last year a couple of times. So,
but how things,
we didn't scare you.
No.
But
I'm
how
back.
Things have changed. So we got a lot more to talk about.
Yes,
and,
we do.
You know, give us an update about you. What's going on?
I'm still with AXA Advisors. Been there 18 and a half years. Been a great ride. I love it. My family's doing well. My oldest son just got married 3 weeks ago. And my youngest son is at Michigan State playing football. So, and then my other daughter's going to get married in February. So a lot going on in the Morrissey household.
You see, you thought you escaped the payday for the weddings.
Right. No,
now you're going to have to fork over.
It's my turn. Right,
yeah.
Right.
So hopefully all those investments are paying off.
A lot of 85 Bears, too, with kids playing football. It's just really interesting to me. If you look at all of them, obviously Walter Payton's son played, and Otis Wilson and Matsui. It goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he loves it. And my older son played at Boston College.
So. The influence of your older son on your younger son, was he a major influence in putting it, not getting him in Michigan State, but encouraging him to be a player?
I think so. Just growing up with it. I mean, he went to all the football games, the high school games, the grade school games. So, yeah, he was involved,
well, just
obviously.
Your oldest son's 28.
Correct.
And so your son that now is...
Yeah, he's 19.
So
yeah.
there is a significant difference there.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Oh, he always looked up to him, and that's they nice. Always got along. I mean, there's a big gap there, but he definitely helped him out.
So that's a great program.
Yeah, they're doing very well.
Unbelievable that they're at number two, Ohio State number one. Maybe that winds up that way in the Big Ten. And also in the national championship. Yeah. Yeah, you hope so.
Do you have a Jeremy Langford jersey yet?
Not yet.
Michigan State product
right.
for the Chicago Bears, now rookie. He's been a nice addition. And, you know, that's the unique things about some of the Michigan State kids that have been coming out, that they are a good example of their program and play well.
And he had played four different positions. So a lot of people don't know that. But he came in as a corner, went to linebacker, running back, back to corner, and then back to running back. So he...
You know, there's a certain skill set in the NFL that if you took a certain group of linebackers, you can make them great running backs. You can make them a great different position players according to their diet and stuff. So I think there's so many quality athletes. Sometimes the hardest thing is to figure out where you're going to play your best.
Well, they can do that now. I don't think back then I could have played running back.
No. Now, I'm talking about the good athletes, not me and you.
What was your playing weight?
Oh, the heaviest I weighed in at was 225, and that was like April of before my third year. So I normally played at 215.
Wow.
210 to 215, yeah. I could never keep
the one thing that I personally don't like is when you get to the NFL level and you start projecting guys to play. So if they've never played safety and they've been a corner, because they have the speed or lack of their speed or whatnot, you try and force them into that in the NFL. And I just think it's hard enough to make the NFL, to make a position change. And it does work every now and again, but I think by and large it doesn't work. I don't know how you feel.
Well, the young man last night, I was watching a game. I forget who it was now. But he played basketball, and it wasn't like a tight end. He played point guard in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And now
that's Quentin Rollins.
Hey, now he's a defensive back.
Yeah,
that's
he
amazing.
Never played football.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I mean,
a really
talk about
a great story.
But there's significant... If you're going to make a transition like that, it's about what instincts do you have in the sport.
That's true.
Because everything's not going to do just because you run a 4.240 or you can jump 50 inches. It's going to be about understanding the process in front of you so you can get in the best position.
Right.
The instinct. Those numbers, they'll get you in the conversation.
Right, right, right. That's
well, if
right,
you have both, then you have a
I mean, there's a lot of world-class sprinters out there that can't play football, you know.
We saw that many times, and I remember Dick Girano used to talk about that. Just because you can run fast doesn't mean you're a football player. And that's exactly right. But, you know, you look at Pete Carroll's Seattle roster, Larry. Many different guys that started in that game Sunday, in the case of the center, playing just a couple of weeks ago, snapping footballs for the first time in his life. He was a defensive lineman, and he's snapping. He's converting a quarterback, B.J. Daniels, to a receiver. He feeds the hunger of guys, all these undrafted players that have had big impacts on that Seattle team and helped them win a Super Bowl and helped them get to a second Super Bowl.
Not only that, but I'm really impressed with, if you look at their mid-round draft picks, guys like Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, they seem like they hit so many more times than not, and that's been a big key for them.
But Sherman was a receiver.
Well, you know, they've been around long enough where they have a little bit of a track record. It's interesting to see what the development possibilities of this first draft that Ryan Pace has gone through. Because when you start really looking at this thing and the contributions of Jeremy Langford, the development of Eddie Goldman, the future development of Hronas Gresou, the future development of
Taya Fabaluge,
who's got a great ability, all these guys, and
Adrian Amos,
all these guys that have come in. Now, you put two or three drafts like that together, boy, you're talking about immediate youth development and future of a roster.
Yeah, and they're obviously trying to stockpile some draft picks with some trades this week, adding more picks for next season, and it's clear that they want to build towards the future.
Well, that's the whole plan. You got to build through the draft, and that's what Ryan Pace definitely wants to do. So you go into your position meeting, your group. It's a small group, outside linebackers, and one of the most prominent pass rushers in NFL history is no longer there when you show up on Wednesday for team meetings again. What's that do to a room, a linebacker?
I think it gives them opportunities. I mean, I think they have a number of players that are good enough to get out there and produce, so now it's their time to shine. So I think it's a great move, great move.
You know, there's a selfish aspect to that moment, too. Because, if you're still in the room and there's one less guy, your opportunity is also increased. You're closer to that front door.
Correct.
So, you know, in everybody's life, no matter the relationships you build, it's a lot of times it's all about you, and that's the selfish aspect of it. I think Jared has been a great reflection of hard work, dedication, you know, an interest in his dealing with the Wounded Warrior Project. I admire him, and I think his reflection in that room will still be positive.
It's going to be a little interesting, too, when you switch teams like that. And I wanted to ask you, because I know that four Bears that played for the 85 team went on to play for the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was different for me because I went up halfway through the year, and it was tough. I always tell people, if you don't go through a training camp with a team, it's tough to really get to know the players on that team. So, but when I went up there, they accepted me. Basically, I played special teams for them. So, it's a different feeling.
Did you ever put that G on and say, "What am I doing up here?"
Well, the first time I put on those yellow pants, it was different.
See,
yellow, not gold. every single time we play a team that has yellow or gold pants or uniform, he gives the scouting report. I'm like, what's the piping? He is yellow. It's never gold, that's for sure. And then the other move of John Bostic. And John Bostic is the 50th pick of the draft just 3 years ago and led this team in tackles a year ago. But this coaching staff never got to know him because he was banged up the entire offseason, got himself in healthy enough condition to play a couple preseason snaps, but then was banged up again. When you have a first-year coaching staff, certainly one of this magnitude, a veteran bunch, they're not waiting.
Right.
They're not waiting, and I think that's the story with John Bostic. That's an eye-opener, I think, for that roster also in that locker room.
I agree, because I think he's a great talent. I think he's going to do good things with New England. But like you said, I mean, they can only wait so long for someone to get healthy, someone to produce, and someone to fit into their scheme. So I think it was a win-win for both teams.
I don't know. I've never seen a player that's got a less out of a lot because he has a lot of ability. He's got a willingness to hit guys hard, but he's never on the field. And you're never going to be 100%. You have to have a mental frame of mind that you got to be willing to play through some discomforts. And if he doesn't grow up going to New England, I don't know if he will play. Mm-hmm. So I see a guy that has ability. But again, ability has only got you the opportunity. Now you got to create, you know,
that's true,
some availability.
Not to name names, and I don't want you guys to do that, but when you guys played, was it obvious who was like that, players like that? And what was your opinion of guys like that that were in your locker room?
That's a weeding out process of football. You know, again, it's the selfish reasoning. I want me to be dedicated to my craft, and I want my jersey every single day. And that's all I live for. And that's the same desire that I think every guy in that room had for us.
Mm-hmm.
That was a unique thing about it, is we didn't have guys that were lingers. We didn't have guys that just wanted to have a helmet on Sunday, you know. So it was different.
You see a lot of guys that built their way up through special teams on that team. I mean, Tom and I were on a kickoff return together. I mean, Rivera was on there, Thomas Sanders, Tim Reitman.
Dennis Gentry made
a living
out of
it. I mean, you go on and on with those players on that team. So we basically earned our way up through the ranks.
No, I think it was a badge of honor, too. And then when Neil Anderson came in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was
Tremendous.
The best first rounder special team player I've ever seen.
I totally agree.
And I like the concept of putting starters there too. I know the injury risks are there, but Seattle does it. You know, teams do it. Right. You don't want to overdo it.
But all right, who's the Todd Gurley running back drafted this year? Could you imagine him being a flyer on the football team for now? Neil Anderson, drafted out of Florida, first round tailback, is a flyer on punting.
And he was on kickoff return.
Right, it would be unheard of.
Well, there was a guy named Walter Payton that was still on the team at that point, too, I think was one of the reasons. But isn't it all about effort at that point?
It's about the desire to
still
be
did
there.
It.
Didn't Harbaugh volunteer to do special team stuff also?
Tomczak got a penalty in the Super Bowl on kickoff coverage.
Tomczak?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
I remember that.
What did he do?
He wanted to get in the game.
Kickoff.
He hits the guy late on the sideline or something. But it was, 15-yard penalty covering a kickoff. Yes.
Well, you know what? You embrace guys like that. Is a great trivia question. I don't think anybody would get that except for you, the team historian right now. But I love guys that they need to be out there. They're not there to just collect the paycheck. Right. And you want 53 guys like that. You want 63 guys like that with the practice squad. And you just want guys hungry.
The Bears, Jacquizz Rodgers, I mean, you look at his desire on special teams and not being a huge guy. You admire his desire because he's a great contributor to the offensive backfield. He can do everything, but his willingness to contribute in special teams, which it makes him even more important.
He's listed at 5'7", but his running back coach, Stan Drayton, said 5'6". And I did approach Jacquizz in the locker room the other day. I said, hey, listen, I had your back on the coach's show. I said, you're listed at 5'7". He goes, he's 5'6". I say, listed at 5'7". He needs that inch. But I wouldn't want to tackle him in the open field. Right. He puts his head down. He's strong. He's thick-legged. I mean,
he's got a small tackle target, and that's hard for a defensive player to have that. Well, you know, it's like the phrase that Ditka always used to use about Barry Sanders, and it's a football reason. You got to fire your gun. That means you got to go full speed out of the barrel at 100% to try to hit him, or else you're going to miss him. And I think that's the same reasoning when you go and tackle Rodgers or Barry Sanders or these smaller, elusive guys.
All right, so let's turn the page. Seattle's history, you're 0-3, and Oakland comes into town, and they've got some life. They're 2-1, they got a quarterback. Derek Carr is playing extremely well. A year ago, he had the lowest yards per pass attempt in the league. They played it safe. They didn't have many weapons around him. Now they're bringing in some weapons. They got Amari Cooper, 8 catches last week. He's clearly one of the best rookie receivers in the league right away, and no one should be surprised by that fact. He was pro-ready at Alabama. Boom, he comes in. They bring in Michael Crabtree, give him a role. They drafted a young tight end, Clive Warford. They have a running back, Murray. Got 135 yards. Now the yards per pass attempt go way up. It was over 9 for that game, and it's over almost 8 for the season. Tell us about Derek Carr and what you've seen, fellas.
He's not a gunslinger, but he's got experience from his brother. He's got great enthusiasm. He's been able to develop a little bit of moxie through some rough times with the Raiders. But, man, now you talk about the weapons you've given him. So it's kind of the perfect match where he's got respect in that room as the quarterback. He's still a young guy, and he's really enthusiastic. If you ever see him run downfield after a big completion or something, he's getting in the mix right with the guy. So I think that's what they need to see, is they need to have a young guy with a lot of excitement and being a contributor to the football team's excitement. You know, don't throw a touchdown pass and run to the sideline. Throw a touchdown pass and celebrate with your teammates.
I think confidence is a big thing with him, too. If you watch last year, he struggled a little bit. This year, he's starting to play well and just builds off itself and feeds off itself.
There's no question. I mean, I think they put up over 25 points in each game they played. So, I mean, it is explosive.
And I love that 39-year-old Charles Woodson. Okay, he's got his shoulder taped up. He almost blew it out the week before. Gets an interception. But his quote, it's all about the quarterback. You know, there's hope. That gives them hope. And now the Raiders, who have been a horrible road team, but they've been a horrible team, horrible franchise for many years. That was only their third road win in the last 25 games. So now they got to come right back here. Maybe you have to hop on that right away. Make them feel tired right away in this game.
Yeah, I unload the Fangio on them repeatedly and relentlessly.
That's a new
and then
is that a new dance or what? Because I like it.
And then I would get after Woodson. I'm not going to let a guy tell me, oh, I'm 39 years old, I got a bad shoulder, all this. All right, I'm going to get at you. I'm going to send blockers to that shoulder. I'm going to hit you, and I'm going to clear a path in that area, whether it's to throw the ball to or keep that eight man out of a box, out of the running box. So, you know, that's the approach that the Bears have to have. What can they do to win football games? Not a feel-good story about a 39-year-old or
right.
Jamarcus Webb playing the right guard position or Mike Tice being their offensive line coach. That's all left in the past with the Bears. It's about the Bears taking a step forward and winning this game.
So you're not excited about Webb Nation coming to Soldier Field?
No, I'll unleash the Fangio.
Someone's going to have a sign at the Soldier Field.
That's the headline, unleash the Fangio. And on defense, they have an extremely talented Khalil Mack. They threw like 30 pounds on him in the offseason. He's now a 270-pound left defensive end that you have to block. So he used to be similar to your old size. Now he's a big burly defensive end.
I think establish a running game. I think we've done an excellent job of doing that. If we can stay with that and then get some passes, you know, I think it'll work out.
Last time the Bears were 0-3, 2003, they beat the Raiders in Week 4. Gotta hope that repeats itself.
Wow, look at
another history will repeat itself, hopefully.
You know, there is some historic, you know, you think of the Raiders-Bears battles of the past, and the great one, I think it was in 84 when they knocked all the quarterbacks out of the game. McMahon lacerated his kidney. The Raiders were looking for quarterbacks in the stands because they didn't want to come on the field because the Bears' defense was beating them so badly. So you think about it as older guys that we are that you remember them, but this next generation of Bears-Raiders games, I think, will be a lot of fun.
That was one of my favorite games ever. I was at that game in 1984. You talked about, I remember Walter Payton, a nice spinning touchdown. But you're right, because the Bears knocked out both Raiders quarterbacks. And there's a funny story about the punter, Ray Guy, who they only had two quarterbacks. Ray Guy knew both quarterbacks were hurt and that he'd be the next guy in against the defense, and he was hiding behind the bench.
So
the coaches couldn't find him.
I mean, you think these things are fiction, but you know what? They're human beings.
Right.
That was not the team you wanted to go
with. They signed up for that.
They had to get the quarter. I believe it was Mark Wilson and David Hum, and one of them got hurt, broke his thumb, I think. Mm. Went to the locker room. The other one got hurt. They had to wait and get him out of the locker room and bring him back into the game.
Wow. He's going through his protocol.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen today.
Well, we all know that there have been backup quarterbacks on teams in this league that have no interest in getting in there. The paycheck just looks too nice, and it's a little comfort zone, but that's not the case when you play against an old 85 Bears defense like that. All right, that's going to wrap us up. We appreciate you taking the time, Jim, to come on in.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Jim Morrison, former Chicago Bears linebacker. For Larry Mayer and Tom Thayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. That wraps up this week's Chicago Bears Roundtable. Thanks for watching.